Good morning, Lake B. It's good to be with you again as we are continuing to journey together. It is great to be with some folks that we may not have seen in a while. And so today, Pastor Lena and I are joined by Molly and Vanessa. And let's start by giving them just a little space to introduce themselves.
Thanks, Tally. My name is Molly Manao, and I am a hospice chaplain with Providence Hospice of Seattle. I've been with them for 8.5 years now, and I actually, Vanessa and I have some overlap. You'll hear where I did my initial training at Harborview, and so I have a great love for that place and for where she's doing her work. My family and I have been attending Lake B, gosh, for about 1.5 years now. I think we're entering into that space, which is strange to say that it has become our home. So I'm happy to be here and get to be here with all of you today.
And that's awesome. Your husband, Paula, is the one who read the scripture. Morning. Vanessa.
Hi. Yeah, my name's Vanessa Coker. I've been attending like the I'm not really sure, maybe like 2 years now, cumulatively. Like Molly said, I work at Harborview, which is the county hospital for King County, and it's also the level one trauma hospital for the Wami region up here in the Pacific Northwest. And I'm a spiritual care resident, or a chaplain, kind of, I use the terms kind of interchangeably. And I've been doing that work for about 1 year now. So I'm still pretty green to the whole thing and yeah, have a lot to learn from people like Molly. So, that's what I do.
That's awesome. Thank you for being here. As all of Lake B knows, this is how our sermon's going to happen today, right? It's going to be a discussion with all of us. And that discussion, in large part, is something that we invite you, Lake B, listening in, and whoever you are, to join in the chat box, if you will, as this happens, and share with us your thoughts. And we'll obviously be there as well. And we'd love to interact and conversate as this sermon unfolds. And in many ways, that's how we think about it. This sermon is unfolding as a conversation. In particular, today, the kind of theme that the scripture brings us to is healing. And in talking with Pastor Lena, this idea of deep waters has really, from 2 weeks ago, has resonated with many. And it resonated with Paul, Pastor Paul, and Pastor Lena, as well as myself. We were just really thinking about how, in this season, God's abundant grace is really exemplified in the deep waters, troubled waters, all of that. But yet, God says, "I can be present on and within deep waters." And I think, in part, Pastor Lena, the idea of inviting Molly and Vanessa is this idea of these folks are in the midst of troubled waters,
Absolutely.
Doing their ministry and doing their work in this season, really all the more
Wow.
troubling and grace-filled, possibly, right?
Definitely. We often talk about frontline folks, and the both of you represent to me an interesting picture of frontline workers, chaplain, spiritual care providers for folks that are and families really. And I hope that we get to hear some of what that is looking like. I have so much respect for the both of you and for the way that you are responding to, God's invitation to the ministry, to in ministry. So, excited that you all are willing to be with us this morning.
And in many ways, right, Pastor Lena, these two folks represent a lot of folks at Lake B who are in the helping ministries, are in servant roles. If you don't know Lake B, it is a place filled with chaplains and social service workers and teachers and educators and people who, therapists, people who love helping people. I don't know how we did how that happened, but I think it has a lot to do with Pastor Lena's heart for ministry and service. So, yeah. So this is, you two represent really a strong presence at Like Be. And in this discussion of the text where Jesus experiences or is about the healing, two very different healing stories in many ways, two very different ways of thinking about healing. But to start off, let's talk about how you think about this text in terms of those who are present to healing in your work. I would love to be a part of like seeing healing happen, but I know you're also a part of things that don't always work out that way.
I think about this kind of this idea I grew up with that that I've since kind of problematized a little bit, but that this idea that like I have to get out of the way in order to participate in somebody else's healing, like less of me, more of Jesus kind of idea. And I think I've really come to see that that's not helpful for me. That healing, participating in another's healing is a very self-involved act. That our stories and our bodies and our own healing is like really implicated in another's healing. And I think I see that in the text, albeit in really different ways with the centurion and the woman and the son. That's a funny thing about the second healing text, which maybe we'll talk about later, is the healing that Jesus gives to this man, the son of the widow, I feel like it's just as much about her healing as it is about his. So it kind of complicates how we think about healing in that regard.
We're gonna have to go there.
Trying to keep it short.
Sorry. You gotta go there. Molly, how does that, what do you take away from that?
When the topic of healing comes up and things like miracles come up, like for me, those were some of the most challenging places when I worked in the hospital in particular. It's a little different in hospice, but it still happens in hospice. We still have people who come on service who the family says, we're praying for a miracle. And as a chaplain, I feel like they get shut down so often by people like the nurses, doctors, whoever, or even sometimes chaplains. I mean, people come in like telling me what I need to tell the family. But I found that to really be able to journey with people in these places is to be open to pray with them for miracles, even when everyone has told them it's not going to happen what they think. And as Vanessa said, like that's part of the healing process, is being embraced and walked with in those places, like going into the deep waters with them. This is when we talk about the deep waters. This is like you're walking into deep waters with people. Like that's the role that chaplains, that people in our community do all the time in the work that they do. And it also changes your view, like what does healing look like? You know, and it might be very different than what we think. And I sometimes talk with people about plan A and plan B. Plan A is this total physical healing. That's this miracle, this beautiful miracle like we see in the pages of the Bible. And plan B is it's a heavenly healing, and that the healing looks different. It might be healing for the people that are left behind, healing in relationships, healing of regrets. There's all these other types of healing that can happen. And
do you guys find that in those two stories, right? In the first story, there's a request. And in the second story, there's not a request. Like nobody asked Jesus in the second story to heal. Jesus just did it, right? I know how I feel about that, how I initially that there's this I will and then I may not, or you know, and so how that's a very that feels discomforting, because it makes me wonder about, you know, healing and miracles, and how do you guys sort of deal with that question in your work?
For me, it counters the idea that we're in control of the healing. mm-hmm. that we control whether God heals someone or not. When Jesus, you know, just heals this man who's died without anybody asking, it means it's not about us. And I feel like we can get sometimes into these kind of name it and claim it things. And you see it in it's woven its way into Christian culture, and it appears, and it can appear that way in the biblical text. Your faith has made you well. Like if we just have enough faith, we're going to get that healing we want. But I think what's beautiful in this second one, where Jesus just does it, he sees the need and he does it. It isn't about how much we prayed or fasted. It's about, for some reason, Jesus decided to reveal himself in this way.
Yeah. And this reminds me, Lena, of being a dad, right? That there are times where I go, I'm just going to go do this for my family, my daughter, my wife, or my son, right? I'm just going to go do this. And I'll buy them that thing, right? Or I give them that gift, or I organize that event. But then there are times, like, especially I have one daughter who will come to me and go, Dad, I know you can do this.
Come on, Dad.
I know you can do this. And in many ways, I'm like, they really believe I can do this. Right? And I think, Molly, that's what it sounds like to me, that we can treat God as a jack in a box with healing. Like if you just turn the thing good enough, turn that faith, boom, it'll pop. As opposed to we're in relationship with, and God becomes really impressed with us at times because we do ask him for the most outrageous things. In particular, we can ask him for things right now in this space of healing that's really hard for us.
I want to ask a question before we got on. I don't know if Vanessa, if this was you that was talking about this, but the difference between, or the, how we talk about cure and how we talk about healing. Could you say more about that? I think that's, I, when you mentioned that, I was like, ooh, that's interesting. I want to hear.
Yeah. I feel like it connects to Molly's point too, of all people in the hospital, especially have all these different expectations, right? The family is holding out for the healing. The doctors are saying there's no cure. Everybody's on really different pages sometimes. I think that, I think that healing is, we have to be able to kind of widen our lens about what healing can look like, that healing is not always just a physical or a bodily reality or possibility, but that healing is a really relational endeavor. And I think that shows up in the, yeah, in the second healing text, right, where the, yeah, we could say that the man is cured, right? He's sick, or he's died. Right. He's more than sick. He has died, and he's cured, right? But there's something about that. There's something that happens to the widow, to the mother of this son, that she's not cured. There's a healing that happens for her there. And it's a very like social and relational kind of healing. So kind of like widening our lens about, okay, like what Molly said, like plan A, sure. We all want the plan A. Like I want the plan A when I'm with families, and thinking of a family in particular, you know, I want the plan A that their son survives this horrible accident, but the doctors are saying that it's not going to happen. And yet to journey with this family, I hold out with them for that plan A, while also making space for plan B of like, and so what if he doesn't survive? Then what does it look like to move forward? And that's a hard space to be in. Takes a toll.
I, as you guys are talking, what I'm imagining, like what an important role chaplains play, right? Like widening the, like putting your foot in the door before it shuts, and you're kind of prying this idea up of the healing in the total holistic way. And I love that, because I think that's what we're trying to continue to talk about at Lake Berean is, right, how do we see ourselves as whole people and not just, you know, one dimensional, like physical healing, but there's, I think in God's economy, it's shalom.
Yeah.
It's that wholeness. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I throw this, because this was very powerful, Vanessa, in terms of healing and cure. And you talked about it in the second story, but in the first story with the centurion soldier, what you said actually changed my mind about who I think the chaplain is in that text. I actually think the chaplain is the centurion soldier.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I remember when I was reading it, it's so funny how quickly we put ourselves in the position of Jesus. We're like, oh, we're Jesus and we're here, we're healing. Yeah. But I was thinking, I was like, okay, but what if I took myself out of that kind of privileged, and the centurion has some privilege in the passage too, right? But like maybe the centurion is the chaplain who advocates, who comes to Jesus and says, we need this. And my servant can't advocate for himself because he's unconscious or he's not well enough. And so, yeah, that role of advocate is so important to the chaplain role too. And I'm still figuring out what that looks like, but I think that's so true, Telly. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Molly, yeah. The role of advocate and even Pastor Lena, I'm about to blow up and preach a sermon 3 or 4 times off of this because
I can't wait. That's so awesome.
Right, the centurion is the chaplain, the centurion soldier who recognizes Jesus's authority, who relates to it in such a way that says, you can speak to this situation. Yes, you can. He goes to the powers that be, Jesus, and says, against culture, against the norm, and says, you as a Jew, though I'm a part of the Roman guard, you can speak in ways I cannot.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's amazing. Like that shifts the whole perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, and I hadn't pulled myself out and shifted that. And that, like you said, that shifts like the whole story, mm-hmm. But you're right. That is the chaplain is advocate.
Oh my God.
Like, yeah. And we all play that role in different ways. Like you talk about Lake Bee's full of chaplains and we all advocate in different ways. And that is a key part of my role. Like, to be honest, in a day's work, I don't actually say that many prayers sometimes because I had a supervisor who told me like, that's the way for people to get you out of the room the quickest and not talk about anything. If you come in and just offer a prayer, sure, chaplain, say a prayer and off you go. But there's all this wide, like you talk about this holistic ministry of life and story that people have to share, but you also get to see the needs of people. And for me, I do a ton of advocacy work. Sometimes we get to help bridge that gap for people. We get to be the sounding board so they can talk to us on the side and still experience healing in their relationship.
And all that's present in that centurion story that you just named, right? The conversation between he and Jesus, the bridging of the relationship between that which has died and is in need of healing and the advocacy and the one who can bring healing. All of that is the support systems that the centurion soldier says, I have a host of folks who are willing to help. Like there's just so much that you brought out there that relates to that text so strongly. And really it goes back to this idea of healing and cure that Vanessa, you platformed for us. Thank you. It was just amazing.
I've thought a lot about you two and the work that you're doing. And I'd love if you would just give a moment to reflect a little bit about disparities in your work, what you're seeing. We're trying to always be centering this question of justice in our Lake Bee community. So I've been waiting and would love to, if you have thoughts about what you're seeing around kind of the healthcare and kind of disparities in your work.
I was gonna say, if you've been paying attention to the ways COVID is landing on certain communities, then that is certainly reflected in the kinds of patients we have at Harborview. Mm. I mean, it's like a one-to-one. And so, you know, just very aware of the ways that immigrant populations, Black and brown folks, indigenous folks, non-English speakers. Those are primarily the people who are filling COVID ICUs. So it's, I mean, when you look at it on a sheet, it just looks like numbers. But when you're walking through 2 West at Harborview, like, that's what you're seeing. So it makes it very real. And I think that, I mean, that's just kind of like the most obvious disparity that I see. And I think when we think about being advocates, and like what Tally said, like putting our energy towards advocating, you know, for the people who have been, hit differently and disenfranchised, and the healthcare system, that's like a whole other, it's like a whole other conversation. But it's tough to see that those numbers, yeah, they're real. They're not just like statistics on a piece of paper, you know.
Yeah. One of the ways I really see disparity in healthcare is what kind of nursing home you end up in. There are different levels of nursing homes, and the ones that serve people who are lower income and tend to be filled with people of color are often not as good. And that is where, for me, I see a lot of role to be an advocate and why it's important for me to be in there. If I see somebody's needs aren't being met, and it happens, and it definitely happens. Mm-hmm. And it's heartbreaking and infuriating. And I have to find ways to advocate that actually get things done rather than get the door shut in my face. But it's pretty scary how you can look at, you know, and of course it's not complete against the, you know, across the boards that way, but it's often the case. And the other disparity I see is that the people who have been most exposed, you know, to COVID in nursing homes and in assisted livings are often immigrants, people of color, because they're the ones who have the CNA jobs. They're the ones who are doing all the hands-on care. They were the ones who had the most exposure. I had conversations in the hallway before we went into universal masking for staff, when there wasn't the personal protective equipment. And so people, they weren't having the mask at work. And I had a woman tell me, they don't care about us. They don't care because we're immigrants, we're disposable. And she really felt that way about the management of the place and that she wasn't protected. Huh. And she was still there because she had to work. I mean, that's part of this, is that the people who are working, doing these jobs, the people who are in grocery stores, you know, like the people who can afford, who get to work from home, are overwhelmingly higher income and white. Like, and so like this luxury of being able to work from home and be protected isn't extended to all the people who are doing the service type, who have the lower paying jobs. So the people who earn the less are the most at risk.
Yeah.
And we definitely see that in the medical system as well.
I also want to, I'm just recognizing that, like, I think there are people that will come into the hospital and they know already that their needs might not get met, probably won't get met. And so they don't self-advocate, whether it's making sure their pain needs are being met or making sure that they're getting discharged to the right place. And so, yeah, thinking about like, certain folks are already coming into the system knowing that the system is not built for them and that they're not going to get their needs met. And that puts another layer of like, okay, now thinking about what advocacy means and prioritizing care for those people, paying attention to, like you seem like you're in pain. Have you asked for pain medicine? you know, no, I haven't asked for, well, why haven't you asked for pain medicine, right? Like, and really, yeah, that's kind of another facet of advocacy.
Wow. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for that. I think it's important because we're, you know, you both know we're really always trying every week at, with the opportunity to center these kinds of perspectives mm-hmm. so that, you know, people know that it's, no, we're not, it's not being made up. It is really real. So mm-hmm. thanks, you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pastor Lena, what is it that you as a pastor in this moment of Lake B, what do you sense is kind of our, what does this text call us to do? What's yeah. the action steps that we take away from this?
Yeah. I had a moment in there when you guys were talking, because I think the model of ministry that's very embodied, first of all, and like anybody that's listening right now can do this, right? And it really is being present to people. And we talked about this last week or the week before, allowing yourself to be proximate to people. You know, I don't know if it was Molly that said this, you know, sometimes people need an advocate, someone who will stand with them, you know? And so I think when that was said immediately in my mind, I thought about many people who have called and said, so what do I do? You know, we're talking about justice. What do I do? Well, I think this is a really, really important pointer to some of the ways that you can show up in community. Right, bring your voice. Sometimes you have access to things that others don't, influence, you know, and but you got to be proximate. You got to be in relationship because you can't do it, you know, from a distance. I think about, you know, what you both have said, kind of how much of your roles are in that role of advocate for between and four. Can I just ask you what, because I do, I just want people in this moment to sort of know who you are and to remember who you are and what you're doing every day when you're showing up at the hospital with families. You know, what is it that you would like for folks to know about your work, but also know how to be present to you in terms of prayer?
I think something that I'd want people to know, like we've been kind of like dancing around it this whole time, but like everybody can be a chaplain. Like it's not this like holier than thou kind of, I'm like, we chaplain every day, people chaplain every day. And that like empathy and compassion aren't these like, you either got it or you don't. It's, these are things that we practice and things that we cultivate. And I think a lot of my work as a chaplain when I show up to the hospital is I'm thinking about how I pay attention to people, not just what people are saying, but how people look, how people are kind of like what, how they're emoting, like just like paying attention to like the whole person. And then asking questions. I think that we all do that in our daily lives, but that's how, I think for me, that's how it's best to show up for people who are especially in deep waters, you know, like paying attention and asking questions. What is it you need right now? What is it? Do you have you don't know what you need? What if you had to guess? Could you take a guess? Like what would bring you some comfort? What would bring you some semblance of comfort right now? Or I can see that you're having a really hard time identifying what would be helpful. So I'm just gonna be here. I'm just gonna sit here. I'm just gonna be here with you. Those are very pragmatic questions, but I think those are a lot of the kinds of questions I'm asking. And
yeah, so much of what you're saying, Vanessa, is how I ended up in chaplaincy as a career. Is it's just, I found just being with people and being able to ask, and I found myself asking good questions. I had people on the bus who told me their story that I rode the bus with every day, and people I worked with. And like you said, we're all able to do those things, but it is so much, life gets so busy and we're running from thing to thing that I think being able to just stop and be with people and to really hear their stories and to, is huge. I do it like I don't like I one of my favorite parts of my job is caring for staff in the nursing homes I go into. So as a hospice chaplain, I'm assigned primarily facilities. So I go into different nursing homes. I make sure I know the staff that work there, not because it makes my job easy, which it's important to build relationships, but also because I care about them. And if they feel cared about, they do a better job caring for the people they're caring for.
Really good.
And so it's huge to just, I mean, I think of when one of my facilities got hit really hard with COVID in the last few months. And just for me, like, I really didn't want to walk on that floor, let's be honest, but I geared up. And part of the reason I went was for the staff there, because I'm like, that staff needs to see that I'm willing to come in here and be with them. Mm-hmm. And I care about them and I'm checking on them. Even if they don't have anything to say, they know that I'm there. And and that became, because I think that's one of the other big things is even as, you know, we have all this work trauma and tragedy we see, but it also happens in our personal lives. You know, I've lost good friends. We lost a friend 2 weeks ago and it's horrible. But part of it is just sending somebody a message. Like I've even just sending a text that says, you don't have to text me back, but I want you to know that I love you and I'm thinking of you. Like it can be that simple. And I know for some people, they're like, I don't know what to say. And it can be really simple. And I think just reach those little small reaching out to people make a huge difference. And it made a huge difference to me. Like I think about, gosh, last spring when all hell was breaking loose with COVID, you know, I had a couple people who just were sending me regular texts. I'm praying for you today. You're on my mind today. And I knew those people had me. And that, it really made all the difference for me. Yeah. So I guess that kind of answers your second question too, is how to support us. Is just like, yeah.
Yeah, amen. Yeah, it can be really lonely work. Yeah, lots of grief, lots of secondhand trauma. Okay. And we talk about a lot, my coworkers and I talk about a lot being containers for people, right? We're kind of these containers, we're like carrying around these big buckets all day and letting people fill them up. And then it's hard sometimes to pour that back out. And so, yeah, I mean, it can be really, really challenging and kind of draining. I love getting a text. I love knowing that there's people, yeah, thinking of that work, not just our work as chaplains, but everybody who's in a hospital or in hospice care right now. Like those are some of the hardest hit places right now. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing with us today. Friends, I hope as you listen to this conversation that you are inspired to head into the deep waters, that we are chaplains to our neighborhoods, to our jobs, our communities, our family, our friends. God has put us in a place to be proximate to pain. And in the midst of that, maybe God will just show up and do some miracles. Uh-huh. Or maybe God will respond to your big request for change to happen. But whatever it is, the kind of words you've heard today about advocating is something we all can do. Uh-huh. And we all must do. And in fact, what this inspires me to do, Pastor Lena, is do a little less back and forth with folks who I disagree with politically or theologically, but to spend more time advocating for those who don't have the voice.
Yeah.
That's what the word. Inspired me.
Yep. That's a good use of energy.
Very rich conversation. And I want you to know that there are people, and now that you made it known, I mean, I would expect that there are a few folks that I'm thinking right now that will for sure make sure that we are carrying you all in prayer. You'll probably be getting a lot of texts. I think it's difficult, especially when we need to have some place to pour out what's been kind of put in us, and not being together isn't letting us do that. But I just hope you know that we are thinking of you, that our prayers are with you. And to your point, Vanessa, to all those who are frontline folks and in hospitals, especially right now. So thank you both.
Well, thanks. Thanks, everyone. Good to be with you, and have a great day. And we continue to pray that we will see each other again in person.
Yes. Yeah.
God bless you.
Nice.